It's hot. It's humid. It's summer. What better time than to talk about parental alienation? Are you ready? Grab some lemonade and let's get to it.
Welcome to the Divorce Resource Guy podcast with Jason Lavoie, aka the Divorce Resource Guy, a former divorce attorney turned divorce coach, talking about all things divorce, including the good, bad, and the ugly from an attorney's point of view. Remember, you're not alone. And now, your host, Jason Lavoie.
All right, welcome to this episode of the Divorce Resource Guy podcast. I'm your host, Jason Lavoie, aka the Divorce Resource Guy. And today we are talking parental alienation. And if you've listened to my podcast for a while, you know I've done some shows on this. It's a very serious topic. And that's why we are continuing the discussion today with expert guest Joseph Goldberg. Now, Joseph Goldberg is a recognized expert in parental alienation. He's the first to pioneer educational conferences on the topic. He's organized and hosted events at the Metro Toronto Convention Center, the Mount Sinai School of Medicine in New York, and at Dawson College in Montreal. As an education consultant, he is the co-author of several state-mandated divorce education courses, including curricular content on the subject of parent-child relationship problems. He is a member of the prestigious Parental Alienation Study Group and founder and chief executive officer of the highly regarded consulting practice called Goldberg & Associates. Let's talk about parental alienation and get right into it. So please let me welcome Joseph Goldberg. Joe, how are you? Welcome to the show. Glad you're here.
Hey, I'm great. Thank you for the invitation. Wonderful to be here.
Yes. And we're here for a very important reason today, talking about parental alienation, which is a hot topic to say the least. And I've talked about it a couple of times before on the show, but you could spend days talking about this stuff. And so we're going to come at it from a slightly different angle today and talk about some things that I have not spoken about on the show before. So I hope everybody listening will get something out of it. I know they will. But first, before we get started talking about it, let everybody know who may not be familiar with you, where, you know, a little bit about your background and kind of how did you get to this point in your life?
Not an easy question, but I have a consulting practice for high conflict cases involving children in family law divisions. And the work that I do, I describe as psycho-legal education and litigation support services, which essentially means I work behind the scenes in cases where a prospective client hires me to work with them and their lawyer on these very difficult and complex cases involving parental alienation or other factors involving similar looking parent-child relationship problem issues.
That's a background. That's definitely a background. You play a very important role in the whole, not the process, but the relationship dichotomy between a client attorney and yourself. And so it's very important that everybody be on the same page, right? Because as far as how to approach it and move forward, because this is an issue that if you're dealing with it, unfortunately, you really have to have some strategy on how you're going to approach it.
Absolutely do. And, I would also just like to suggest to people that if they go to my website, which is parentalalienation.ca, they can get a much better understanding of the kind of work that I do, because it is unique and there's not a lot of people that do this type of work. So that would be the best way to educate yourself about my role in these kinds of cases and how I might be able to help someone in this situation.
That's great. And we'll get that website out again at the end of the show. But let's start off with what probably seems like a really basic question, but you know, people think they know what it is, but oftentimes they really don't. So when we talk about parental alienation and we talk about, well, what is parental alienation? Let's get that out of the way right from the beginning. You know, let's define what we're talking about when we say parental alienation in the terms of a divorce context. And then maybe after that, you can go into, you know, what it isn't.
Great. Well, you know, I'm sure a lot of people who are interested in this topic have done their own research. A lot of people today do that. And so they're probably already aware that the term itself, parental alienation, is quite ambiguous in terms of what it means. It means different things depending on who you talk to. I like to say that the general consensus for most people would be that parental alienation is what happens when a child is rejecting a parent for unjustified reasons and largely due to the negative influence of the other parent. And this term sometimes gets conflated with another term called parental alienation syndrome, which was a term coined by, as everyone may know, Dr. Richard Gardner. And, you know, the ambiguity of the term itself is what's driving a tremendous wedge through the theory of parental alienation, because there's a lot of people who would argue that that is a somewhat misleading concept, in that you're largely attributing the child's behavior to the actions of one particular parent. And I happen to agree that this is a substantial flaw in the definition, because there are many factors that have been sidestepped by many of the experts doing research into parental alienation, which I believe has an impact on why children react the way that they do when you're looking at it from the perspective of a family law case, and you see a child rejecting a parent and they're trying to determine what is the causal factor here. And if people doing this work would look more closely at some of the other contemporary research in medicine, for example, they would understand that a lot of other factors like stress and brain chemistry influences the way a child would be reacting, as well as adults for that matter. And there are other factors that I think are important that I've looked into, like self-control and self-regulation failure. These are terms that are widely being researched by neurologists and other experts in medicine. These factors largely impact how people behave. Stress, brain chemistry, self-regulation, and self-control failure. And also, I would add to that, the influence of the unconscious mind, which is a...
That's a big one.
A whole nother topic that deals with the predictive mind theory. And so a lot of people don't know what the predictive mind theory is, but essentially what we're talking about is how the unconscious mind rules our behavior. So when you talk about parental alienation and, you know, what is the definition of it, I would say that it's a substantially flawed definition in its current state. And to answer the second part of your question, what isn't parental alienation, you know, I would remind people that Richard Gardner, who coined the term, again, parental alienation syndrome, said that it couldn't possibly be parental alienation if the child has been exposed to domestic violence or abuse, because in those situations, it's not parental alienation. And so I think the definition has to include those disclaimers, because people gravitate more to what they think the term means rather than what it doesn't mean. And there are too many people, unfortunately, that are falsely accused of parental alienation that don't deserve to be criticized for what they've done.
So just while we're on that, can you give me like an example of that last part where somebody may be falsely accused for something they not have done? Like what do you mean by that? Just to put something around it so people can hang their hat on that.
Well, you know, it's very easy for a parent who's not seeing a child who wants to grab onto the label of parental alienation, say, well, you know, my ex-spouse was doing this to my kids, turning the kids against me, when the truth is something that is hiding the fact or trying to discount the fact that that parent may have committed violence in the home or abuse against the child, or may have just other significant parenting flaws that rise to the level of justifying why a kid would reject a parent.
Right.
And so they accuse this other parent of this behavior, which is just an excuse to cover up their own shortcomings.
Right. That, and that's well said. And if I could just piggyback that for a second, basically, I think what Joe's trying to say and what we're trying to say here is, you know, if you have one parent who, let's say, abused a child, right, which obviously is in every way unacceptable and can and be very traumatic and damaging to a child, that in and of itself can explain why a child may not want to communicate with that parent. And then that when that parent then says, oh, that child is being alienated from me, well, you have to look deeper, basically, as to the reasons. And that would be a very valid reason, domestic violence. So, you know, basically, it's a fact. It's very fact sensitive. Every case is, you have to really peel back the onion. I'll use the onion analogy. Peel back the onion to really get at all the dynamics at play that can explain why a situation is the way it is.
Yeah, I agree with you.
That was a lot more wordy than I wanted it to be, but I couldn't help it. When we start talking about this stuff, I mean, right, you feel like you have to almost over explain things because there's so many variables at play. But that's fine. That's how we learn. And that's how we get people to understand it. So, all right, I think we have a good idea about what parental alienation is and what it definitely is not. So with that, we'll move forward here. Now we'll talk about different ways, because this is a big problem in the courts. I know this from when I was practicing. You know, judges, they don't know how to handle this. Or I should say, they don't know how to handle this well. And most of them. And, you know, they end up, I think, following a boilerplate cookie cutter formula that that's all they know to handle these things. But what are the different ways, you know, that one can handle a parental alienation case? And, you know, in other words, how can you tackle it? Is it, you know, one size fits all, or are there different ways to skin the cat?
So I guess we're talking about essentially parental alienation treatment.
Right.
Is that correct? Okay.
Correct.
Well, so I'm gonna try to jump in here and I'm gonna get into talking about this because it's a really big, important issue. I'd say the main thing that people want to find out is how do we address this problem, right? So I'm gonna say summarily that parental alienation treatment models are a failure today. They're not a success story. And I'm telling you this based on not only my experience with hundreds of cases over more than a decade, but also I'm going to borrow some of these opinions from a journal article that I want to cite. It's called "Are Intensive Parental Alienation Treatments Effective and Safe for Children and Adolescents?" And it was written by Jean Mercer. People can look up this journal article if they want to. And it's very current. It was also written in 2019. And so in reference to part of your question, you know, what are the best approaches? There was a meta-analysis of these treatment models, a systemic review that was done in 2017 by Templer, Haynes, and Cox. And here's basically what their findings arrived at. they said that none of the treatment models for parental alienation included a control group to assess its efficacy, their efficacy. And also that the design of the interventions were considered to be very weak. So let me tell you about five of these parental alienation treatment models that were reviewed. Some of them are well known to people that have the problem and are looking for solutions. So here are the five that were reviewed in this journal article. There was Family Bridges by Dr. Richard Warshak. There was High Roads, which was, I guess the mastermind of that was Craig Childress. And then there's Overcoming Barriers. Then Family Reflections by Kathleen Ray. And lastly, one titled Transitioning Families. So let me get into a little bit of the granular details about these models. So first of all of these models have acknowledged that these are not therapy or counseling interventions. So it's not therapy. They're described as psychoeducational in nature. And there's a few variations on each of the models. If I take Family Bridges and High Roads and Overcoming Barriers, the only difference between those three is that Overcoming Barriers would include both parents as part of their model, whereas Family Bridges and High Roads only involves the rejected parent and the child or children. So there's that little bit of information that they're not therapy, but psychoeducational models. So now I want to talk a little bit about what the findings were in this journal article about these particular programs.
Let me just interrupt you there for a minute before we get into the findings, because I know I have a question, and if I have a question, there's a good chance other people are going to have the same question.
Go for it.
Like, what is the difference between therapy and psychoeducational models?
Well, a psychoeducational model, what psychoeducation refers to is where you have a therapist, normally a mental health professional, a licensed mental health professional, who's working with the patient and the patient's family members. And the goal is to try to help those family members understand how they can help that family member with the problem make better adjustments to helping themselves. So ways that other family members can help contribute to maybe reminding them to take their medications or things along that line. So it's a sort of a model of having a group of families in a group setting, interacting with each other, learning from one another, ways that they can understand the condition of the patient and how best to assist each of those family members with the problem. So that's the psychoeducational model. And so, for example, in Family Bridges, what you have is not somebody who's a therapist trying to, you know, help the child change his behavior, but rather maybe presenting, say, some social science videos, let's say, on Stanley Ingram, on how, you know, people can respond to situations where they act in ways that they thought were correct in their behavior, and then they come to discover that they were actually misled. Their perceptions were faulty, and so they try to help a child understand, you know, don't make assumptions too quickly.
Right.
Without considering more of the possibilities. And so that psychoeducational model is to try to help children learn how to use their critical thinking in more constructive ways. I guess this is the best way I could explain it to you.
Okay, that helps. No, that helps. All right. So we'll talk about, let's get into the findings that all these studies have, and we'll see what comes out at the end of this.
Well, it's really very interesting. So in Family Bridges, Dr. Richard Warshak presented a report involving 22 subjects for review. And out of the 22 participating family members, they admitted that there was a 20% regression rate, which is a fairly high failure rate if you're looking at that statistic. So 20% is pretty high. At best, the clinical rating of the program was ranked as being only on the promising level. And it should be noted that his program comes at a price tag of $20,000, which is beyond the cost of affordability for most families. So that's Family Bridges. If we're talking about High Roads, which is the parental alienation model developed by Dr. Craig Childress, well, he has already conceded that there was not yet any evidence basis for the program. And in addition, what Childress did is he outsourced his program to a life coach named Darcy Pruder, who is an unlicensed mental health professional. She's a life coach. And unfortunately, this is a side note, but when they were marketing their program for continuing educational credits, the American Psychological Association stepped in and revoked those CECs. And they instructed, they instructed the AFCC, for people that don't know what that stands for, the Association of Family and Conciliation Courts, the APA instructed the AFCC to not allow his presenters to participate in continuing education in the future. So that's a pretty ugly stain on what they were trying to do. So I'll tell you a little also about overcoming barriers, just like Family Bridges. The only thing I'm going to comment on in the study was that they received a rating that was no higher than a promising level. And so collectively, all of these models for treatment are clearly not on the right track, even though they've been around for over a decade, somewhat hawking their services to a very naive public.
And courts who use these services. Because I think judges would buy in and send cases out that kind of utilize that those models, and you know, just because that's all they knew.
Yeah. So now let me also add, just for emphasis, that these parental alienation treatment models, they not only admit that they do not provide therapy or counseling services, just psychoeducational services, they also share the assumption that parental alienation can only be treated successfully by removing the child from the preferred parent for a period of time, which requires a court order. And the term that's most often used to define this parent-child relationship problem is labeled VRR, which stands for visitation, refusal, and resistance. So I just want to add that this is a substantially flawed concept as well, because I'm going to read something from the journal article that highlights why it's a flawed concept. And here's what an excerpt from the article says. Parental alienation theory sees VRR as largely caused by a single factor, the attitudes and behavior of one parent. Although the effects of substantiated abuse are admitted, this position is implausible in light of studies of child development and of family dynamics that emphasize the effects of multiple factors and of interactions among those factors. So that's a statement that dovetails with what I was talking about earlier, how the definition of parental alienation is flawed because it overlooks, it sidesteps important other causal factors of the child's behavior. And again, I go back to, how stress impacts brain chemistry and the self-control failure.
Basically, it's complicated.
Yeah.
Right. It's not a simple diagnosis.
Correct. And I don't want to sound like I am completely, you know, bad-mouthing everything about the effort to treat parental alienation. You know, there is, of course, the alternative of reunification therapy, but I have to say reunification therapy is, it's not evidence-based. There's no parameters for how it should be conducted. A lot of people doing the work are underqualified, incompetent, because they don't have a requisite understanding of the parental alienation dynamic. So if you don't even understand dynamics of parental alienation, how could you identify it or treat it? And so you get a lot of, I would say, outcomes that are not only bad, but make matters worse. And that's the history of reunification therapy. I hate to say it. You can ask 9 out of 10 people that have been through it. I think they'll all tell you that it didn't do much good, and it didn't have much of a lasting effect when it did.
No. And that's what the courts, again, they gravitate towards, that reunification therapy. That's all right away. All right, well, let's do some the judge orders it. Let's do some reunification therapy. And it just, right, it doesn't produce the results. It doesn't help, in my opinion, as an attorney. But again, the judges don't know what else to do. You know, what? So the question is, what should judges and what should courts and everybody involved, how should they be approaching this?
Thank you. That's like the next right question to be asking. So if we're gravitating towards the opinion of experts who are steering us towards failing models of intervention, we're like lemmings going over the cliff.
Yeah.
And so what does work? You know, when people ask me that today, you know, I tell them that I think that there are alternatives that are evidence-based, that are affordable, in part because they're covered by insurance. And for some people that have very limited financial resources, which is 95% of the public anyway,
right,
you have to be promulgating approaches that are going to be successful. And so I do have a number of alternative approaches and therapies that I believe, because they are evidence-based, would have a much higher success rate with treating parental alienation in children. And I think that the solution is putting the treatment emphasis on working with the child, not the parents. So contrary to all this literature saying that you have to have just the rejected parent and not the alienating parent, or the belief that both parents have to participate, I'm telling you today that the opposite is the more effective direction to go in, which is just focus on a treatment intervention that works with the child and not the labels of parental alienation.
And I don't know, maybe it's because I've, you know, dealt with this and discussed it at length in over the years, and have personal experience, you know, through my experience as a divorce attorney. But it seems common sense to me that you would want to approach it that way, because the child is kind of like ground zero, you know, and that's what you want to address. You're not going to convince or change, you know, whoever's labeled as the alienator, whichever parent you want to label the alienator, you're not going to convince or change their perception and conduct, really. I've never seen that. You know, they think what they think, and it's ingrained, and it's a problem, but trying to get them to change is not the answer. And to go over, going right to the child and getting them, because children are more adaptable and open to, you know, suggestion is not the word I'm looking for, but open to, you know, looking at things in a different perspective. That, yeah, I agree.
Jason, do you mind if I interject? Go. Something that I think your audience really wants to hear. Because I've talked around the answer. I haven't actually given a more concise answer. And I don't want to play games here. I want to be direct to your audience. Because the main thing people are asking is, okay, Joe, so what do we do?
Right. What do we do?
Bottom line. So I'm going to tell you what I would be telling people today that need help. There are two particular models that I believe would be the most effective approach to treating parental alienation. One is a therapy that is called, it falls under what's called ABA therapy, which stands for Applied Behavior Analysis. Now, this is a evidence-based therapy that has been constructed to help children that have autism. But it also is used for children that do not have autism. It's used to help children that have been traumatized, children that have oppositional defiant disorder issues. But it's an evidence-based behavior modification that works essentially on what some people refer to as an ABC model, which stands for antecedent behavior consequence, ABC model. And this is covered by insurance. It is a therapy where you reinforce or extinguish a particular behavior through these techniques that they now have. And I think that would be a way of normalizing a child's reactivity to a parent that they reject. Now, that's affordable, covered by insurance, applied behavior analysis therapy. The other option is, sometimes if you can't get a therapy for reunification of a child with a parent in some way, you could consider something else that I looked into and I strongly advocate for. It's called psychoeducation tutoring. So now what is that? So psychoeducation tutoring is a model that is evidence-based. I would ask people to Google the name Dr. Joseph Strayhorn. He's the mastermind of this model, which basically works on the psychological skills of children in a way where it builds up the strength of their critical thinking. Now, that may not sound like it's going to repair a relationship with the parent they've rejected, but it balances out the faulty perceptions that they may have had. And it could lead them back to that parent. And regardless of whether it did or didn't, it's a gift to give a child psychoeducational tutoring. And it's affordable. I'm going to tell your audience listeners that the cost of that program is $100 a month for a child to be enrolled in it. And for that, the child would be receiving five psychoeducational appointments working on exercises over the telephone. And the telephone is the only way that they conduct this service. And there's reasons for that. I can't go into all of the details.
Right, but sure.
I'm asking your audience to look into psychoeducational tutoring, Dr. Joseph Strayhorn. By the way, I get no credit for any of this, so don't anybody think that I'm profiting in some way by these referrals. I'm not. I don't. I'm only interested in the best interest of children and families. But
the next question, let me jump in there too, because the next step though is, now that we've identified some of these alternatives, now you got to convince the lawyers, to convince the courts to go that route, to recognize them as alternatives, because I guarantee you the courts don't even know about it.
You're right. And so we're launching today. What you and I are doing today is we're marking this time on a calendar for historical reasons, that these new approaches and interventions are available, they're affordable, And if you reach out to me and you ask me how we can make that happen with my working with a lawyer on a case, it's easily done.
I can see that. I can see that. You tell the lawyer what they need to do, and the lawyer tells the court and makes the application, right? Is that basically it?
It's easy peasy, just like that.
And listen, the fact that these things are covered by insurance is huge. Huge.
Yes, exactly.
So that's it. All right. I've always wanted to be part of history. So today's the day. Maybe one day we'll have monuments after it. Okay. Well, Joel, listen, I mean, I want to end, you know, if there's something you want to get in at the end here, we're running out of time. I know I could talk to you for hours. I'll have to have you on again because there's a lot more to cover on this subject. Like this is it's a huge subject, but I'm glad we got out what we did today. But how do you want to end? Leave people with what they should do, the next steps, if they feel like they are in a situation where they are dealing with parental alienation.
Well, I think it kind of begins with the question, you know, it's like a chicken and egg question, you know, like, should you hire the consultant first or should you hire the lawyer first? And so, you know, I believe that, you know, there needs to be a new architecture in vetting and selecting a family law lawyer, especially for a high conflict case involving children. And, you know, there may be what looks like a lot of similarities in how high conflict cases appear, but the mechanisms for solving the problems are not at all the same. And most of them require a lot of creative thinking in how to bring the right set of professionals to assist the family. So what I see is that lawyers have a short interview process that normally, you know, does not include pausing to confer with experts or consultants to assist them in formulating the right strategies. At best, they offer a very brief consultation that they normally charge a fee for, and that does not include anything near the amount of time necessary to consider the factors and how to best help a client. So for that reason, people are led to believe in the strength of, you know, a promise or the impression of a lawyer's personality to win the day, which is a false positive belief on behalf of the client, you know, who is, I'd say, parsimoniously compromised by their emotional stress. Sure. So when people come to me, I conduct a detailed interview. I drill down into the issues that are going on involving the children, and we focus a lot of attention on what are the best approaches to solving the problems. So, you know, I would say that it should start by it should start with the consultation with an expert in parental alienation. Let things begin at that starting point, because I think that if they, before they run to hire a lawyer, they have this consultation with the expert first, they're going to get feedback and recommendations, and they're going to understand why it's so important to have that consultant involved in working with the lawyer on these strategic issues. And that's what I would like to leave your audience with as the sort of end of the show comment.
And I will piggyback that as the host and say I agree, because I preach all the time the importance of forming your divorce team. And the word is team. One lawyer, no matter how good they are, is not going to oftentimes be enough in a highly contested case, especially with children, like you said. And you got to form your team. Now, which comes first? Like you said, that's a chicken and egg discussion. But you can do it almost at the same time. You know, meet with somebody like yourself, Joe, a consultant, a coach. Get their feedback on what they think, you know, a lawyer needs to have to handle a case like this. Then when you interview the lawyers and you go on these consultations, you will have those questions at the ready to be able to ask and get feedback. And you can make decisions from that. You know, you don't have to do one first. You want to do it. It's like a puzzle. You're trying to fit all the pieces of the puzzle together. And you got to start somewhere. But choosing the right attorney, I can tell you, is crucial. Choosing the wrong one will be a costly and time-consuming mistake. So in that respect, you may not want to pick your attorney as the first person of your divorce team. You might want to go elsewhere and talk to a couple other professionals that you think you may need and get their input, because Joe has a lot of input on, you know, what an attorney needs to have to help you, especially in a parental alienation case. So, I mean, would you agree, Joe?
I agree. I think that, you know, people, unfortunately, are under a lot of stress, and they're looking for a lawyer to just take over. They don't understand that the consultant doing this work that I do overlaps the expectations they have about relieving all that stress, because until you've been to my website, until you've actually studied what it is that I do exactly, you can't imagine how wrong you've been in following the advice of anybody else.
Yeah, no, I agree. And let people know where they can find you again.
Parentalalienation.ca.
.ca. Okay, not com, C-A. And I'll have that in the show notes too, so you can look it up in case you forget. Well, Joe, I think we got a lot of good nuggets out here today. And like you said, hopefully today will be the beginning of the proliferation of all these new and hopefully better ways to handle these kind of cases. So thank you for being on the show. It was a pleasure having you on again, and I know the audience will appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
All right, there you have it. Another one in the books. I hope you enjoyed it and found some useful information in my conversation with Joe Goldberg. Parental alienation and how you approach that type of a case matters so much, and it matters that you address it the right way from Jump Street, and not waiting to get into it too late and when some perhaps irreparable damage to everybody's relationship, parents and children, are done. So if you are looking for help or some divorce coaching with your situation, please don't hesitate to reach out. You can learn more about my services at jasonlavoie.com. I do individual and group coaching. Also, subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already, so you get all new episodes when they come out. In the meantime, all I'm going to ask you to do is be strong, act confident, and stay positive. I'm Jason Lavoie, a.k.a. The Divorce Resource Guy, and I'll be seeing you real soon.